Moray eels do not brush or floss, which results in leftover flesh from their victims ending up lodged in between their multiple rows of razor-sharp teeth. These small chunks of carcass will remain stuck between their teeth until they literally rot away, however long that takes. As you can imagine, anywhere there is rotting flesh, there is going to be an aggressive amount of bacteria. A moray's bite does not have an electric shock or venom, but it is loaded with bacteria. So much, in fact, that a not properly treated bite wound will easily become infected and spread to the victim's bloodstream, causing septicemia or sepsis, which very often leads to death.
I basically was paddling a kayak with one hand, even though you need two hands to paddle a kayak. And I just remember it was my right hand. So every left hand stroke, I was like, all right. And then I'd go to paddle on the right and would be basically chumming the water myself. Like, there goes all this blood. There's blood all over the kayak. I can't think straight. I gotta get back to work.
You are listening to the Teeth Podcast, wild animal attack stories directly from the survivors. My name is Jeremy Carberry. I am a wilderness kayak guide, animal handler, the survivor of a few attacks myself, and your host. What exactly happens to cause a moray eel to attack? Also, how could someone survive being exposed to all the bacteria from a bite without getting treatment from a hospital or antibiotics? Well, I found the person who can answer these questions based on firsthand experience.
My name is Elise, E-L-I-S-E, and I got bit by an eel. All of a sudden, my alter ego, Elise, comes to fruition. Like, it was meant to be. I was meant to be eaten by this eel. It's okay. One of my friends, once we were talking about this is really funny. Little side note. She was like, well, what if your name was Rachel? Would the eel still have gotten you? I'm like, yeah, Rach-eel.
Elise was attacked by a moray eel while harvesting scallops off of Santa Cruz Island. Santa Cruz is part of the Channel Islands, which is a wilderness area, 20 plus miles or 32 plus kilometers off the coast of California, and even further from anything resembling a hospital.
Been working at the Channel Islands National Park since 2017 as a sea cave kayak guide. We take the boat out with all the clients, and we give our kayak tour, but then we'll stay for a night up to four nights in a row. You wake up, you go do your tour, and then you go to bed. And then you do it all again with like a little bit of drinking and fishing and rowdiness in between, you know, just a little bit, just a little.
I first met Elise on Santa Cruz Island in 2019, the summer of the eel attack. She was 27 years old. Because of our distance from the mainland, the national park has less pollution in the air and water, creating clearer dive visibility than the mainland. The north side of Santa Cruz Island is made up of massive rock cliffs. The cliffs usually start underwater for about 30 feet or 10 meters and then shoot up hundreds of feet tall, creating breathtaking views. The rock walls have cracks and caves that provide plenty of underwater hideaways for wildlife, including urchin, scallops, and morays.
Eels are blind. Eels can't really see a dang thing, so their best way of hunting is their sense of smell. They have a really, really, really good sense of smell. So if you take a piece of squid or some scallop guts and you dunk it in the water, they pick on that, up on that, like really, really quick. Yeah, instantly. And they'll blindly slither towards the smell and they latch on.
If you're asking yourself, why would someone risk being bit or even losing a finger to the terrifying jaws of a moray eel? Well, that's because you probably haven't tasted a purple-hinged rock scallop. Most people have not. That's because you can't buy them in a store, restaurant, or anywhere. It's a recreational take-only species. The only way to get them is to get a fishing license and get into the water yourself. Is it worth the risk and effort? Even after the attack, Elise says, definitely. Honestly, I'm a little hesitant letting you in on how good these scallops really are. But I'm going to because it's essential to understand Elise's motivation of being in the water that morning. This prized scallop species that Elise was going after has been analyzed by a professional taste panel at San Diego State University and compared to common brands of commercial scallops that you can purchase in a store or restaurant. By almost all criteria, Purple Hinged ranks superior. If it's not the most delicious thing I've ever eaten, it's in my top five. Straight out of the shell and raw, the adductor muscle is so tender that you don't even have to chew it. The flavor is also amazingly not fishy or seafood tasting at all. There's a subtle sweetness to it that can't be compared to anything else. My favorite way to eat them is lightly seared in some garlic and butter, but they go good with just about anything. Tacos, scrambled eggs, grilled cheese, ramen, etc. Elise is not known as being particularly generous with sharing the scallops she collects, probably because of the effort involved in finding, collecting, and cleaning them. There is also a daily limit of 10. However, she's been very generous with sharing her knowledge, which is very rare among fisher people.
With scallops, they have to constantly be underwater. They can't move like crabs, for instance. So you have to dive down and get them. The big ones that you want, like size of dinner plates sometimes, they're as far down as they can get. That's for protection from the sun, protection from drying out. So you go at a low tide and those scallops are kind of right there for you. You don't have to dive. You don't have to hold your breath for very long, especially once I got the technology to dive for scallops, aka glorified crowbar, right? With an abalone bar. You go down, you see the scallop with its red lips. These are just rock scallops, you know, so like wedged into the rock, and then come up, take a breath, go down, get it off the rock. Then you just put it in your bag. So I would not call myself a free diver, just a glorified snorkel scallop queen.
Snorkeler with benefits.
Yeah, snorkeler with benefits. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the potential liabilities to weigh against the benefits of scalloping are potential injuries from urchin. There are multiple species of urchin, and they are very plentiful in the water surrounding the Channel Islands. People have different reactions to the urchin injuries. The spines from different species also vary by length, size, sharpness, and venom. An urchin fisherman in the Channel Islands permanently lost the ability to make a fist after a bad urchin stab in his hand. I've personally ended up in the hospital once from urchin spines, but the scallop queen, Elise's body, has somehow evolved some kind of natural immunity to the spiny invertebrates.
I don't wear gloves. I got a lot of urchin in my hands. Urchin are everywhere. And actually, I have a lot of them in my feet too. You kick them and the spine gets into you. Or when you have to pry these scallops off the rock, like there are urchin around. And the urchin aren't like scattering away. So sometimes when you're in there with the abalone iron, with like crowbar to get the scallops off the wall, that pressure of you finally releasing the scallop from the wall, your hand smashes into the rock and the urchin and the spines break off. It's one of their defense mechanisms, so you can't blame them.
They break off into your body.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
Other than the very sharp urchin spines to be aware of, there are also moray eel teeth. Their teeth are distributed along two sets of jaws. One set of jaws that you can see as the moray is opening and closing its mouth, where you would expect to see the jaws of an eel. And another set of jaws further down the throat to hold prey in place and make it harder for that prey to escape. When morays latch onto something with all of those teeth, they usually roll their entire body repeatedly to rip off chunks of flesh, the same way an alligator or a crocodile does. Elise had never seen a moray eel underwater off of Santa Cruz Island leading up to the attack, but was very aware that they lived there and knew of the potential damage an eel can inflict.
For scuba divers, for people who dive for scallops, for people who like dive down in general, to stick their hands into crevices or put their hand in the wrong part in the rock, and the eels, they get you and they literally take fingers off. Like, it's a very common ailment.
Morays are nocturnal hunters, but are occasionally active during the day, especially if they smell something dead or wounded. Like sharks, they're an essential part of the ocean's cleanup crew and cut down on disease being spread by rotting animals. The California moray range from Point Conception to Baja, Mexico, and are the only species of moray that live off of the western coast of the continental U.S. So we know for sure that Elise was attacked by a California moray. Larger and healthier populations of moray eels are usually found in and around marine protected areas, which is exactly where Elise is hunting scallops. It's the very early morning of July 21st, 2019. We are on the north side of Santa Cruz Island. Us kayak guides refer to early morning missions that are not work-related as dawn patrol. In order to wake up before the sun, there has to be a really good reason.
Low tide means less breath hold, so I can get to the big scallops faster. I have a picture of me and two of my coworkers, Ruby and Pat, before we went out. It was like, it's like tagged at 6:53 or something. And it's like, we're coming for you, scallops. And we look really tired and the sun's just starting to come up.
Elise is bombastic, energetic, and clever. She's like very good at entertaining people, and sometimes can seem like a clown, but usually she knows what she's talking about.
Pat McCurry is Elise's friend and coworker who was with her throughout the entire ordeal that morning. Pat has had encounters with California moray eels before the morning of this incident. He recalls one instance after he had shot a fish and was preparing it.
I was cleaning a fish over a little pool of water, and I had no idea there was an eel around. And as I was cleaning it, the fish, this eel appeared, and it just swiped the fish guts from right below my feet.
That experience and others with moray eels left a deep down, mostly subconscious connection for Pat.
And I remember like talking about uncomfortable feelings in my body, and my therapist asked me to like put them, like paint a picture with these uncomfortable feelings. And the like first image that popped into my mind was an eel. I'm pretty sure this would have been before the event with Elise. So yeah, eels for me like represent something super shadowy and untrustworthy, and that I can't fully comprehend like what they're thinking or feeling. Like, they don't seem like a sentient being. They seem like they have some supernatural power, or like something divine, maybe evil about them.
Morays all have beady eyes, super sharp teeth, and unlike fish or snakes, smooth slimy skin without scales. Since they don't have gill flaps, they need to constantly open and close their mouth to pull and push water over their gills, which adds to their terrifying demeanor. In order to legally collect scallops, you need to be outside of any protected waters. At 6:53 a.m., the Dawn Patrol crew of Elise, Pat, and Ruby.
We go kayak out of the marine protected area, and the tides, it was so low. Then you have to beach your kayak somewhere on the island so you can go dive around. So we beached our kayaks and just started diving around. And this is all before our normal kayak work. You're allowed 10 scallops in your possession at one time. And I think I got 10. It was pretty easy diving because the tide was so low. And I remember pulling up this monster one, putting it in my bag, and I was like, oh, heck yeah, like that's going to be good later. So step one of scalloping, you go outside the MPA. Step two, you go pick up your 10 scallops, like I said, crowbarring them off the rock. You put them in your bag. Step three is actually getting the meat out of the scallop. If you think about a scallop that you've had like at a fancy restaurant or in a seafood dish, it's just a circular white disc. But there's a lot of other gunk around it that you have to – I'm putting that in the best way possible. It's disgusting. A lot of the gunk you got to get off of it. So we do that out of the water. And then you just, you know, throw the guts back in. Kind of a weird ritual that I do when I go scallop diving. When I clean them, what I do is I get back on the beach and I kind of sort them. And I always save the biggest one for last because it's like the trophy. I was sitting on a pretty large rock, had my knife out, again, taking all the guts out and just throwing the guts pretty far. It's not like I just dump them at my feet, like that's gross. I get my last big one and I remember taking the shell off and it was like a really large disc. I was really stoked about it. And I looked over at my friend Pat, who was on the beach, and I was like, hey, I really want a picture of this because it's big. And like, I don't know, you want evidence. And I take the scallop and I'm like, all right, I just want to give it one more dunk into like what, 3-inch water? Because it had some sand on it. It still had like some vein on it. So I like put it into the water and I remember like something wasn't right and something felt weird and it hurt a lot. And I took my hand up out of the water. There's a 2-foot California moray eel attached to my hand.
If you're picturing a 2-foot long snake, change that up. Moray eels are very tall and wide. Imagine a 2-foot long log with a lot of really sharp teeth.
At this point, my brain was lagging. Like straight up, I wasn't really registering what was fully happening. I knew it hurt a lot. And I knew this is not what your hand's supposed to look like. And I knew that it wasn't good and that I needed to do something about it. And what are you supposed to do when there's an eel hanging on your hand? I don't know. You just shake it. And I was like, what?
I just heard her scream. I think my thought was like, oh, she cut herself on something. Because it was kind of like a shriek, I think. That could be interpreted in like many ways. It wasn't like an oh my god, like. And then when I turned around and just saw this eel attached to her, I think I just had no thoughts. It was just like my mind was blank and I was like, what? Like I couldn't even process it.
I don't know what Pat was doing at this point, not taking a video or a picture because that would have been sick. Pat, what the?
Yeah, I think there might have been enough time to take a picture, but yeah, it would have had to been like very, very cat-like.
But my biggest concern was I have an eel in my hand. So I was just shaking it, screaming.
And the eel was just whipping back and forth and it just didn't want to come off. And then the next thing I knew, it was off.
It flung away behind me. And I remember looking back at it and I was like, oh my God. And there's this eel just like flapping around on the rock. Like for a split second, I was like, uh-oh, is it going to die? But my brain went automatically to, where's my scallop? And not gonna lie, with my gushing, bleeding finger, I looked into the water and I was kind of like, where is that? Something happened. And I'm like at Pat, I'm like, oh my God. And like blood is just running out of my finger. I'm like kind of skimming through the rocks. The eel's just writhing in the background.
It's clear that the eel got the best one. Like the eel struck at the right, at the exact moment to like get the best scallop, and she was pissed and she really wanted it back.
There was no scallop. And at that point I was just like, all right, something's happening to me. And I'm a wilderness first responder. I've been getting my wilderness first responder training for a lot of years. And a lot of times in those woofer classes, they talk about shock. They talk about, oh, your client or your patient's going into shock. And it's like, okay, it's kind of like this, like, just far off thing. I was going into shock. And I think now if I ever find someone who's going into shock, I know what that feels like, because that was me. The blood is rushing from my finger. I'm like, huh.
She was just freaking out, and she clearly went into shock like very, very fast. And so her symptoms were like pretty much silence and mixed with like just a face of terror. I could just, it was almost like I could see the thoughts pouring out of her mind of just like worst case scenarios, like what's going to happen to me.
Elise was experiencing psychosomatic shock. The third friend, Ruby, had gone back to get ready for work a little before the attack happened. So now it was just Elise and Pat.
And Pat's like, oh my God, what do we do? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, this is like, this starts the whole thing of like, I don't know. I don't know. And that's like my mantra for the next hour. Like, I don't know.
It was a trip. And I've been in a few situations in my life where I've seen people in shock. Like, I was sympathizing, but also trying to detach so that I could be of service to her. Because I knew if I had, like, went into any kind of shock myself, I'd be less useful. And so it just, like, immediately your mind sharpens, or at least my experience is my mind sharpens really quickly.
I don't know. It sounds kind of wimpy being like, yeah, my whole middle finger was cut, but it was a lot of blood and it was coming out pretty fast. And it's just not something you expect to happen, to get bitten by an eel during a very routine procedure. Like, I've cleaned scallops so many times, even at that exact same beach. I know what I'm doing. A lot of times people hear the story and they're like, what? Were you in the water? Were you sticking your hand into a hole? Like, that's how a lot of scuba divers lose their fingers, is you just stick your hand into a hole and there's an eel in there and they take the top of your finger off. No, like, I knew what I was doing. I've done this a million times. When you go scalloping out of Scorpion Anchorage, you have to kayak 10 minutes or so out of the marine protected area. So we're at least a 10-minute kayak away. My hand is gushing blood. I know it's going to take longer than 10 minutes to get back. I'm worried about missing work. And with my training and Pat's training, we're like, well, we got to stop the bleeding somehow. We don't have a lot of material. I'm in just a full body wetsuit.
It didn't seem worth it to go into first aid just because her finger was bleeding and soaking wet. And I knew like any bandages wouldn't stay on.
And I had brought a quick dry shirt. And so it was such a nice shirt. I had just gotten him on my vacation to Florida and it had like crocodiles on it. And I was really stoked on it. It was the only thing we had though. So I took this lovely baby blue shirt and wrapped it around my bloody finger. And that shirt still has eel blood on it, as much as I hate that. But it's a good story.
When you're in wilderness setting, like anytime stress levels go up, like it just feels like a recipe for disaster. I feel like the space can like interpret your stress for sure. Animals can sense when you're stressed, especially predators. And I just felt like, ugh, like I don't want to mess with that. Like I don't want more variables to enter this scenario than necessary. So for me, it was just like, clearly we needed to get back.
And Pat was like, should I tow you back? And I'm just like, I don't know. He's like, can you paddle? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I'm like, straight up, like, I didn't know really what was going on. My brain just shut down a little, but I knew I had to get back to work.
And so I think I just did whatever I could to, like, get her in her boat.
I'm, like, in shock again, like, we gotta go. Just, like, monotone, just like, I can do it. He's like, okay, and I'm, like, shaking. He's like, okay, I'll push you off. Are you okay? I'm like, where are my scallops? And he's like, they're here. I'm like, okay, good. Give them to me. And like, I had my bag of scallops still. I wasn't just going to abandon them. So at Pat like pushed my boat out of the cove and we started paddling back, and we're paddling back. And I remember it was on my right hand and I paddled with my left, and then with a kayak, you paddle with your right. And as I paddled with my right, I was like barely gripping the paddle, but blood was just like chumming the water behind me. And I was like, sharks, there's blood all over this kayak. Ooh, we're still a long way away.
I mean, our kayak definitely had blood stains. I remember like having mixed strategies of like some moments just like staying quiet and like just trying to lead her and myself by paddling, and then other moments where I was just like talking to her like don't worry, you're gonna be okay. And I think at the time I was pretty sure of that, but there's always like a little sliver of doubt, like, okay, like her finger might be really fucked. And just, yeah, there's doubt.
I'm so thankful I had Pat there. Just having someone being like, are you okay? Do you want me to tow you? I was like, no, don't tow me. Meanwhile, I'm just like leaving a trail of blood behind me. I don't know. And we get back to the beach and work has already started. Like, we are late. We are officially late to work. It's before a boat full of over 100 people is supposed to show up. I'm supposed to give a kayak tour. We're supposed to be tip-top shape. All the kayaks are supposed to be out. All the gear is supposed to be out. And here comes Elise, typical, covered in blood, just out of her mind. Luckily, one of my best friends, just in general in life, and one of my favorite coworkers, Sarah, was on the beach, and she knows me very, very well. Pat pulls his kayak up and is like, uh-oh, like, something's wrong. Elise got bit by an eel, and no one really knows what's going on. And then he pulls my kayak up, and there's just blood all over my kayak. There's blood, like, coming up on the rocks. And Sarah, I think she told me, she was like, I saw your face, and I knew this was, like, not a joke. This was not some, like, Elise antic. This was, like, serious. Sarah brought me up to our little kayak area, which is, it's just a bunch of sheds. It's not a hospital. It's not even a nurse station, right? It's a bunch of sheds. We're on an island 25, 30 miles off the coast. Like, what are you supposed to do? And thank goodness Sarah's a smart girl and a really good wilderness first responder. Sarah irrigated it a lot. It was a really, really, really deep cut. At one point, she physically had to peel me out of my wetsuit because I just wasn't moving. I was just sitting there. And she was like, you're freezing right now. I'm like, I don't know. Like, straight up, like, I don't know. No, maybe. I don't know. She's like, yes, you are. Nah, it's okay. She literally sits me down, and I remember her, like, just stripping me out of my wetsuit. And I'm just like, okay. Like, because I couldn't do anything else. She was like, well, we got to put a paddle jacket on. I'm like, I don't like paddle jackets. She's like, just put this on. And there's a funny picture on my Instagram of me in this giant blue paddle jacket. I don't know. Like, she bandaged it up and everything. And like, no sooner had she done that than here come our 100 plus clients, like, happy as can be, followed, like, leaded by our island manager, Kyle, who's a really close friend of mine too. And and like, at that point I was like, but I feel like at this point Kyle's like Elise again. Like, I've been around him for a few years. I get into some stuff. He sat down with me. He's like, hey, what happened? I was like, I got bit by an eel. He's like, what? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, straight, I'm like, I don't know. Like, in shock. He was like, well, can you lead a tour? I'm like, I don't know. And he was like, okay, well, guess I'm hitting the water.
The manager, Kyle, decided he was not going to be a manager that day and instead take out the people that Elise would have taken out on her tour so that Elise could rest.
That was that. I was just kind of like in a fog. Kyle was like, stay away from the clients, kind of. Like, nope, stay, relax. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do. Like, walking around in this giant paddle jacket, just like, my fingers all bandaged up at this point, but like, still the medical shock of it all, there's nothing we could do about it. I don't know. It was 9 in the morning. Yeah. There are no boats that can just rapidly take you home. You can't get in a car and go to the emergency room. You can't get stitches. Like, I'm not, I love Sarah, but she's not giving me stitches. You just kind of have to sit it out and wait. And we just had it bandaged the whole day. And that's what's gnarlier about living and working on the island. Like, something happens, you know, you're stuck. And I, okay, saying this, I sound really weak, but it was intense. Okay, also by this point, everyone knows, because the island's very small. All the boat crew knew. All the rangers knew. Half of the clients knew, because I'm just walking around like, I got bit by an eel.
She wanted all the sympathy and glory she could get, which she deserved. And she was like, definitely just... She's slinging the story left and right, just like, look at this, like, I got attacked by an eel. It was crazy. Just like classic Elise.
Sarah, who originally cleaned and bandaged the wound, had to go lead a kayak tour. And a few hours later, when she got back, she immediately checked up on Elise.
She came back. She's like, how are you? I'm like, I'm good. I'm like, I don't know. And she was like, let's rebandage it. I was like, okay. And she did, and blah, blah, blah.
The general rule for wilderness emergencies is that someone's life needs to be on the line in order to send out a rescue helicopter. This was not the case with Elise, so she had to wait with everyone else for the regularly scheduled afternoon ferry from Santa Cruz Island to Ventura Harbor on the mainland. It had been a full 9 or 10 hours after the attack that Elise finally got to the mainland and to a legit medical facility.
I get to the mainland. I go to the urgent care because it's an animal bite and it was irrigated on an island. And they're like, oh, we can't take your insurance right now. And I was like, nah, whatever, who cares? Like, bye.
This is extremely frustrating. I'm grateful to live in this country, but our medical system needs to be evaluated. This exact same thing has happened to me multiple times. When a hospital or urgent care doesn't accept my insurance, they won't tell me a specific answer of how much it will cost. And if I really push, they will allude to it being in the thousands of dollars to check a laceration or whatever it is. Remember when I was talking about the risk of sepsis, an infection that moves to the bloodstream and can cause death? The survival rate of sepsis is only 60%, and it's not entirely out of the question for Elise, especially given the circumstances of the bite and not having it treated in a proper medical facility. It's been a really long day, and Elise decides to go home out of frustration. I would have too in this situation.
And then the next day, I remember calling a doctor that I used to go to, and the only person who could see me was like the geriatric doctor, which wasn't my normal doctor, but like I wanted to get in and see what was up then. So I get back Sunday. On Monday, I go to a doctor. He's like, we'll give you a tetanus shot and there's not much else we can do. I was like, sick. That's it. Send me on my way, said, keep it clean. And I think I had a lot of schoolwork to do the next day, and that was that.
3 days after the attack, Elise's finger was not exactly properly healed up yet, but she was back on the island leading kayak tours.
Yeah, by Wednesday, I was back at it with a cool story. And it's funny because a lot of times on the kayak tours, clients are like, oh, what's the gnarliest thing you've seen? What's the craziest thing that's happened on a tour? And, I have a new answer to that question. From then on, I just had this, well, for a while, for a few weeks, I had this big gash in my finger. Just went on living until I went home for my family vacation. I got bit in July. I was home by the second week of August in Maine, up with my aunt and uncle and family, and all of a sudden, I noticed, I was looking at my finger, and there was like, it was healing kind of weird. Like, there was definitely a really large crease forming. And there was some white thing sticking out of my finger. I was like, huh, that's weird. And I was kind of like poking it. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I do kind of know what it is because I have a science degree. I've taken my wellness responder. I'm like, this is very, very white, this thing that's sticking out of my finger. But it's not my bone. Like, it's not finger bone. Like, I know that. It's very, very small. I was in Maine for a week and a half. And over the next few days, my finger slowly started like peeling back on itself, which sounds gross, but like that's what was happening. And it was a tooth. My aunt, she's a funny one. She was like, oh my God, it's an eel tooth. Let me pull it out. Let me pull it out. And I'm like, it's not ready to come out. Like straight up. I wasn't scared, but I was like a little nervous about it. Like I was like, yeah, that is not a part of my finger. That is a part of this eel. Like it is in me. And she's all like, let me pull it out. And I'd be like, no, not yet. And every day, like around 5 o'clock, she'd be like, let me pull it out. Let me pull it out. Let me pull the tooth out. I'm like, no. And then finally, I think it was either the second to last day or the last day we were in Maine. And I was like, okay, fine. Like you can pull the tooth out. And she did. It was an eel tooth. Straight up.
The tooth was lodged in Elise's hand for multiple weeks and miraculously didn't cause an infection. Elise credits her friend's very thorough and multiple cleanings of the bite that day.
Again, shout out to Sarah for cleaning it. No stitches, no infection, no antibiotics, just a tetanus shot.
Sarah definitely deserves the gold medal of wilderness first response. If that doesn't exist, it should. Since the attack, Elise has definitely spent some time replaying exactly what happened that morning.
The funny thing about eel teeth, though, is eels actually have two jaws. They have their first jaw, which is kind of like fangs, kind of more like a snake. And those first teeth, they are the attackers. They like snap down on, and then they have a second jaw full of very, very, very small razor sharp teeth. Like we're talking like maybe a millimeter, maybe two. Like this is a very small tooth. And those teeth are used to like slash up whatever is in its mouth. So I had one of those slasher teeth. I think, in my scientific opinion, that the eel smelled the scallop, latched onto the big boy scallop with its big, big, big teeth, and then tried to, I mean, I was shaking it off at that point. It's freaking out. It's probably trying to like slash up whatever's left. And yeah, it left a part of itself inside me, and I do still have the tooth. It's taped to a sticky note, and I'm waiting for someone who will help me turn it into a ring. I really want to put the tooth in resin, and I really want to make a ring for my eel finger. So if you know anyone who makes jewelry, like seriously, I still have it in my room, taped to a sticky note. It says eel tooth.
Let's make it happen. Anybody listening who has those abilities or knows somebody who has those abilities, Elise will pay for your services. Reach out to Elise or me, and I'll pass your message along. I first heard of this story with a couple other guys. And after we heard the story, one of those guys said, if Elise was cleaning scallops, why didn't she just use the knife to stab the eel?
Valid boys, I guess.
But also, they weren't in that situation.
No, and exactly, and that's what I was going to say. Like, until you have a 2-foot eel attached to your hand, you don't know. Like, yeah, like, yes, I did have a knife, but in the moment, I just felt this insanity pain, and I don't even know where my knife ended up. I might have not even had my knife in my hand at that point. Because the whole, this sounds very vain, the whole point of this was to get a nice juicy picture of this huge scallop, okay? I'll admit it, right? So I wanted documentation of this really beautiful scallop.
Yeah, but it's not like you're being reckless or doing something stupid.
I was not being stupid. Okay, I was completely out of the water, It was an extremely low tide. A way an eel hunts is through its sense of smell. So their sense of smell is insane. And okay, yeah, I was kind of chumming the water around me, but I was also completely out of the water. Again, only my ankles were in the water. And I don't know how this eel squirmed out, but...
For reference, how many times have you been in this exact same situation?
Oh my gosh, so many. Like, I had been scalloping for, I don't know, I mean, years at this point, and multiple times that season, probably even, because I was out there for 4 days, probably even within that four-day island run. So this is not like a, oh, and I was trying this new thing out. Like, this is very routine.
Other than Elise not dying from sepsis, my favorite part of this whole story is still that the eel got the biggest scallop Elise has ever found. But the scallops that the eel didn't get, Elise brought back to the mainland, prepared them, and even took a really beautiful photo of the bounty. If you want to see that photo and a few others of Elise before and after the attack, you can sign up for our email list at theteethpod.com. I've also posted a video I've never put up anywhere before of a California moray eel that went after me under the water in the exact same area. It's a short video, but it's really cool. It's possible it was even the same eel. As for Elise and her finger now.
My nail's still really messed up. It's like growing out, but it's been, yeah, over 2 years at this point, and I have the little flap, but I also have a pretty significant like cut in my nail. So I think it really, really tore at my nail bed. I also like kind of don't want to get rid of my eel finger, my little nub, because it shows that it happened. Like, I feel like if I took the nub off, you'd have a little bit of a scar and I'd have just a really abnormally long nail. So I don't know. I think I'm attached to it. It's a cool story. I don't know. So I teach also. So I like having my nails done during the school year because you have your hand under the DocuCam a lot. You want nice nails. So I went to the nail salon and I was kind of anxious. I was like, well, I don't even know how they're going to deal with this. And the woman looked at my nail and she was like, what happened? And I'm like, I got bit by an eel. And she's like, what? And I'm like, an eel? She's like, I don't know what that is. And I had to like pull up a picture of her. I was like, this? She's like, and like freaks out, you know? And then when you get a gel manicure, I don't know if you know this because you're a dude, but they go in with like clippers and little wedges and like deal with your cuticle and stuff and like clip your cuticle. And I was like, please don't touch my eel finger. Like, I was so freaked out. It was still pretty fresh. Like a few months later, and I was like, please don't touch it. Like, I was really, really scared about it. Now I get my nails done and I'm like, Dad, don't worry, I'll just hold it up for you. And I like literally like hold up the little flap and they paint under it and they're like, okay. But also I go to the same nail person now, so they know it. I show up, they're like, oh, Elise. And I'm like, yeah, what up?
At the end of our conversation, I asked Elise if her experience had changed her and the way that she thinks about the ocean or moray eels.
Honestly, it was gnarly, but it hasn't changed any of my feelings. Will I dive for scallops again? Yeah, absolutely. Have I since? Yeah. And I do remember like the first time I went diving after this whole thing, I wasn't scared. I've definitely become more aware of eels. Like, if I'm diving, like when I dive for scallops or I just snorkel around, I feel like I see them more, but I'm not scared of them. And I still eat them in sushi. And that's just a really, really cool story that I can share now. That's like kind of why I don't want to get the whole eel finger cut off or like done surgery on. It's like cool. And it's not doing anything like negative. It's just a cool part of me.
Elise is now spending most of her time sharing her love of the natural world as a science teacher, but still shows up on the island on a regular basis because, like her deformed eel finger, the island is just part of her now. The Teeth podcast music is by Davey Chedwigan and Joshua Lopez. Special thanks to my sister Alicia for her help in editing this episode, which was co-produced by Scott Neary and myself. I'm Jeremy Carberry. Will you do me a favor and reach out and let me know what you are liking and what you want more or less of from this show? We are still in our baby stages and can use any encouragement and or constructive feedback you have. It really makes a huge difference. I really hope you find some time to get outside today and observe some of the wildlife while simultaneously keeping a safe and respectful distance. We don't need any more new guests. We have plenty of stories already lined up. Please don't invent a scenario where you get attacked and want to be on the show.